Yeah, baby. Are you sleepy?
Oh, yes. Man, we got the sun right behind us, man. It's bringing...
Look at that.
Look at that. It looks like we've got halos.
I hope we don't raise up.
The Lord is blessing us with sunshine right behind us. It'll go away in just a second. Wow, it does. It looks like a train's about ready to hit us. Good morning. This is the Curry and Claypo Show. We are live fireside. We came out here a couple weeks ago and had such a good time, and it was 47 degrees this morning. I was like, let's go back outside again.
Do you know that, you know, presidents have the fireside chat?
Uh-huh.
But there's never a fire. Rarely. And I know a lot of executive clients who have what they call with their organization, fireside chats.
Yes.
But they rarely have a fire.
We have a great promo that runs. Listen to classic rock, fireside, beachside, poolside, and upside your head. Tony Curry Radio. That's what I'm talking about. Oh, yeah, it's on. It doesn't look like that. It looks like we're about to run. What's going on, man? You just got back from the St. Lucia Islands for your anniversary. How was it?
Yes, it was wonderful. It's really nice to come back. It's always nice to come home. But the weather, I mean, it came back so nice and cool, right? We left, it was like 95 degrees. We were there, it's tropical. It's pretty warm. I mean, it cooled down a little bit in the night, but it's pretty warm. And then, like, we came home. I haven't even been home, not even a week. I'm freezing. Like, my body has not acclimated yet.
Well, you didn't have any air conditioning there either, did you? They were packed with ice. Tell everyone your big wuss ass what you asked the butler for while you were on your...
So we were at a place where, and they have these places where they provide you a, which makes me so uncomfortable, but it's a butler, and you have like a little, it's almost like a flip phone.
Yeah.
And you call, and because of where we were staying, it's up on a hill, on a mountain, it really is hard to get to anything. So you have a butler, and you call, and really they tell you, you can call for anything. And there's people calling for, like, stupid shit, you know.
Yeah.
I want a cookie. And then an hour later, I want an ice cream. And then I want booze. And then whatever. Anyway, there's no air conditioning because it's open. And there's fans. They're supposed to cool you off, right? And, like, big fans, very trade windy thing. And I was like, okay, you know me. I'm a Jew from L.A. This is not working for me. And when my son was in a summer camp in Mississippi years ago, and it was no air conditioning. And he's like, Dad, I thought I was going to die. And one of the counselors said, we'll put ice packs in your pillow, and it'll cool you down. And, you know, I was like, bing! So I called the butler. He's like, can I get you a, you know, cocktail? Can I get you some room service food? I said, no, actually, can you get me 5 ice packs? And he's like, and he literally, he asked me, he's like, Mr. Claypo, did you injure yourself? You know, and I'm like, no, I would like them to pack my, and I watch enough survival shows. And so I laid down at night with the mosquito net and the fans going.
Yeah.
And I packed, took me a couple nights to kind of get the right thing. Packed one here, one here, one here, one here, one behind my neck.
One down there?
But went, not right there, but we got to get here, and then one right there.
You were on your anniversary, you haven't played it down there.
No. Now, they do melt, so in the morning you're soaked. But, dude, it totally worked. Like, it was great. I didn't get cold.
No.
I didn't get hot.
No.
And then it became a thing, Mr. Claypo, 8 p.m. Ice pack delivery in a cooler.
You get it every night.
Oh, yeah. And I can only imagine. I did ask the butler. I said, what's the craziest thing that you ever have been asked for? I mean, because he's like, legal or illegal, Mr. Claypo?
Well, I'm sure they were all.
Like, gosh. So anyway, so yeah, that was my big spicy move.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back. That, I do not like that, dude. I don't like it. Your dog doesn't like it. That's almost got a PETA. Don't you think?
Like, you've seen a dog like that in the pound? Maybe it's...
That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
I went to Home Depot yesterday. I'm in the process of selling my house, and so I'm trying to do the little things to add some value to it.
Like this?
Yeah. Well, it was on sale.
Okay.
Because it is the 6th of October. We're 25 days away, and they were unloading the Christmas stuff.
I was just going to ask. I was surprised. Right, so this was clearance.
It was... Yeah, this was clearance already more than 3 weeks away from Halloween, yep. and they had the Christmas stuff out. It was fantastic. All right, so since you just celebrated your 24th wedding anniversary, we're going to talk about perhaps a couple that will no longer have anniversaries. They'd have to make it till next February to enjoy their 14th, but Giselle and Tom appear to be suffering. It really is. We'll talk about that not only this morning here in Kearney Claypool, but also on Fox 6 this morning at 9:35, along with Janice and Mike Dubs. We'll talk about that.
You can ask them about their marriages.
This is a little bit like Desi and Lucy for me, or Goldie Hawn and...
And Kirk Douglas?
And Kirk Douglas.
But they're not married.
I know, but if they separated, they're legally married.
Yeah, but they're not.
But if they separated, it would bum me out.
That's an interesting list. What
Brad
couples?
Pitt, Jennifer Aniston. We want to see those two together.
Angelina Jolie. Did you see? You saw those new allegations?
Yeah. Did you have anybody in your family that you really wanted to see? Obviously, you want to see them once they're married.
My
brother dated his high school sweetheart.
Yeah. No. I. Okay.
And they were together for like 8 years. Yeah. And then. And I don't know if it was the family that pushed them together, but they've been together so long.
Exactly.
They got married, and a year later,
happens
2 years
all the time.
Later, I don't know, it could have been 3 years, I'm not sure, but it just fell apart immediately. And it was kind of like, her name was Sheila. We all loved her. We all knew her. She was part of our family.
Yep.
And it was kind of like, well, you got to marry her.
Right.
And the pressure of doing that, and it was like we were praying it was going to work, and it fell apart so much more quickly than it came together, because there was nothing really to come together. You were just together.
Yeah, we see what your dad is. That is that you're on to something there, particularly with the sort of high school sweethearts or people maybe who've been dating forever or together forever. And you know, sometimes there's very explicit pressure. We got to get married. We got to get married. Or the outside family's got to get married. Sometimes it's kind of like... it's out of default. You know, we kind of cruise into marriage. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that can be, that's dangerous. Because if it's the logical next step, that is where you have got to pause and say, it's the logical next step as society would determine it.
Well, that goes for having babies too, right?
Oh, yeah.
On your honeymoon, you haven't even talked about how many kids you want, and she's 9 months later, she's having her first baby.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah.
And that is, you and I talked about this with regard to Nick Cannon.
Yeah.
Nick Cannon is a great example. I'm sorry, not Nick Cannon. Adam Levine, last week, right? You don't have to get married.
Yeah, you don't.
Like, you, no, like, you don't
if
have
you
to.
If monogamy is not in your genetic makeup, and she does, then you don't want to marry that guy.
Well, and you don't have to. This is super hard. You talked about this in the... premarital counseling in the Catholic religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the time you've kind of, even after just an engagement, it becomes this social pressure, even self-imposed. Oh, I got the ring. Well, you know, we're making plans.
Yeah.
And you get into this where the party's already happening, and I think that it becomes super hard psychologically to put the brakes on.
The party's already happening is spot on, because I do think that when you've started to spend money,
mm-hmm.
you've started to book dates, you got the caterer, you got all these different things, and you're kind of going along with the flow.
Yeah, and it's
not
terrible.
You may want to get married.
Exactly.
6 or 7 years and now
yep,
it's the time.
Yep.
But also the pressure to not disappoint.
Yes. Oh, so good.
Because
if
your parents love her parents, her parents, and you're already
gone
on vacation together, maybe they live across the street, you've known them for a long
mm-hmm.
period of time, and it's just like, and you start believing yourself
that
this is the right thing to do.
Well, and that's really important what you just said, because that was what I was trying to go after. There's that pressure, but it is very manipulative in a non-malicious way.
Yeah.
You start believing it because everything points to it. But I will tell you, almost every couple who ends up getting divorced will tell you, particularly if they've been together a long time, they're like, I knew, you know, somewhere deep something wasn't right. I didn't know, it wasn't a red flag. It wasn't a major red flag, but it was enough. But I figured we'd get past it. You know, major red flags, that's easy.
Yeah.
Right? He beat me. She cheated on me. Whatever. But when it's the, I'm not, you know, and but then we're going. Train is leaving.
Well, it's we'll talk about this on Fox 6 this morning. It is the divorce spoon.
Yes, I love that.
It,
yep.
It is. We'll get through this.
Yes.
Making a much bigger deal out of this small little thing that really it used to be cute that is really now getting on my nerves.
Yep.
And it's never the spoon. It is just the beginning. It's like going to Mammoth Cave and you find this little hole and you're super excited. You get in there. Next thing you know, there's this cavern. You've got a cavern of issues, and it starts with that small little hole to get in there. So we'll talk about that. Briefly, I want to ask you, McDonald's. Yesterday came out with their adult Happy Meal.
I did not know that. I'm not
blocked. Yeah, you get a Big Mac or a 10-piece chicken nuggets, and you get a toy, one or four toys. You like it? Parents are loving it.
Yes. You know, if you're McDonald's or like any kind of sort of fast food, you know, it's like, it is like the toothpaste.
Yeah.
Right? Is it an adult toy?
It isn't. Well, it looks like a toy, but it's a toy.
It's just a toy.
It's four. It's really fantastic marketing by McDonald's.
I love that.
Because all adults want to be kids again.
Right. So does it come packaged like a Happy Meal?
It does.
Do you get a juice box or do you get like a Coke? Do you know?
I think you get a Coke. You get fries and just like a regular Coke.
So literally.
Well, if you get a juice box, it'll be a kid's meal.
No, but so literally it's exactly the same thing.
You just get more food.
And it's put in a box. We love a good box.
Speaking of great marketing, and I saw a story this morning, according to Lego. You see a couple of Legos, you walk past them like, hey, man.
Yep.
Kind of therapeutic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know when I got a 3 or 4 hour block on Sunday, I put on Red Zone and I can sit down and build a Lego puzzle. It's the puzzle of 2022 now.
Yes.
And they got all these sets and they range anywhere from $99 to $3,099. They did a 2022 Well Report surveying 32,781 parents and adults, not kids, parents and adults. 78% of adults claim Lego play helped their own well-being, while 76% said it was fundamental to their happiness.
Yeah. So listen.
Hold on.
Oh, go.
Almost 90% of respondents said playing with Lego strengthened their relationship with their children or their partner. In addition, 88% of adults through playing with construction blocks supported their confidence. 79% said it helped develop their emotional intelligence. And 74% claimed it supported their listening skills.
Okay,
is this Lego bullshit or is it true?
So listen, one thing I was going to say. So the Lego Foundation does, so you know my son does all this mental health, global mental health research.
Yeah.
Lego is a major funder of parent-child health and well-being research around the world. Mm-hmm. They don't give them Legos. So it's a major, you know, they really invest a lot of money in it. Is it marketing? Sure, there's some marketing there. Do they do? Every company does the survey. Does it make sense psychologically? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a bonding chance with your child. B, I think Legos are somewhat unique relative to puzzles. Because I'm going to go and get a little deep on this. Puzzles, there is a purpose, right? I gotta make a picture. Or there's a thing. Legos, you can do, yes, you could build a thing, but you can do whatever you want.
Well, and they're saying that get one of these Lego sets and don't use the manual.
Well,
that's like forcing the puzzle pieces together and creating something totally new. That's hogwash, because you're talking 4,000 or 5,000 pieces. Now, I used to sit around, I had a box. All we used to have the bricks. We didn't have the wheels. We didn't have
all
that stuff.
Right,
the bricks, and I used
to. And you made things. Yep. Now, that's different. That's what I'm saying. I think the creativity there is very meditative and freeing.
Mm-hmm.
I think having to make a thing, some people are good at that. Like, you like that stuff. My dad liked that stuff. Like, I hate puzzles.
Yeah.
I hate puzzles. I don't want to construct.
I go through puzzle phases. I go 6-7 months and I won't do a Sudoku or anything like that.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, for about 2 weeks, I'm into it and then it goes away.
But you know what it is? You know what Legos are? When you grow up, it's IKEA.
Yeah, a little bit.
And that's why I don't like it. It's like, I got to assemble furniture that has 9,000 parts with pictures.
No, I got some things for you, dude.
No, dude.
Also today, I want to mention we have a big Halloween party. Big Halloween party coming October 29th at Workplay.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Paranormal illusionist David Merlin, who was on the show, is going to be doing a special show. It's going to be a Halloween party unlike any party you've ever seen.
Wonderful.
It's going to be at Workplay. Go to workplay.com, get your tickets for that, and Tony Curry Radio will be there for it. We mentioned we're going to be on Fox 6 coming up here, and also I want to talk about the Alabama fight song. We get together with Jeremy, who's the producer of Fox 6, and we throw some ideas
we
out
threw
every
a lot
week.
Of them this week.
Normally, they tell us what they're talking about, but they have allowed us now because we're in partnership with them, and they love us on Fox 6, and you're on there all week long, and I'm on Thursdays, and they're picking up on some of our ideas. And so we talked about the Loretta Lynn thing. Eddie Van Halen passed away 2 years ago today. We could talk about that. And then we got the Tom Gisele thing. And then I threw out, there's a petition to take the word Dixie out of the fight song, the Yay Alabama fight song. There are only, as of a couple days ago, 122 people that signed the petition. But I'm into it. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, I would have said, this is ridiculous.
Yep.
Now, see, I'm 56. I'm adapting. I'm changing. Because I realized that if it really makes people angry, we had, Ben's Rice. Take Ben off the box.
Yeah.
Now it's called Old Mills, whatever
yes.
it is. We had a university, Dixie University in Utah, changed their name. We had the Dixie Chicks change their name.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Dixie Stampede, that was mm-hmm. a ride at Dolly World, to change its name.
Lady Antebellum.
Lady Antebellum changed their name.
Yeah.
Did it hurt their sales?
No.
Did it help their sales? People are like, whatever, if you like their music, you're going to buy their music. I will throw out Winn-Dixie. Should we change the name to Winn-Dixie grocery stores? I mean, listen, I don't think because you changed Dixie in one thing, when we started changing Indian names, we still have the Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah,
it depends on
the
interpretation, the context, and your intention of using that particular name. In this particular case, I don't think just because you have Dixie, we have a lot of people named Dixie.
They'll have to change their
name. We have dogs named Dixie.
Change your name.
It's not to say that everyone needs to change, but if you want to change your name and the organization or the people that follow you want you to change your name, then I don't see
the problem. Are our Alabama license plates, it used to be the Heart of Dixie. We don't have that anymore.
We
Do we have that?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So I remember when I moved here.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's perception, it's optics. And
a lot of people don't associate Dixie with slavery and the Confederacy. They associate Dixie with, obviously, the Mason-Dixon line, the 11 states that are below the Mason-Dixon line, and this is the Heart of Dixie. When I first came down here, I didn't associate Dixie with Confederacy.
I didn't,
because I was a Yankee. I was a Northerner. I was from Cincinnati. And so I came down here, and I was like, Heart of Dixie, cool. But I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Heart of Dixie. But I didn't associate it with, but then when I started doing some research, I thought, I never knew.
You see, that's...
For the same reason that blackface back in the 40s and 50s was representative of our time, and now it is totally racist that you do that.
I don't know why this goes on my resentment list.
Oh, good. I like
this goes on my resentment list.
Yes.
People who dig in
yes.
and say, this is there's no need to change.
Yeah.
This has been in the face of information
yes.
that really would call into question your view, right? So, like, I'm not saying, like, you know, you have to change every time somebody says something, you need to change. But particularly when you're talking about racism, slavery, even the Confederacy and what it parts of it stood for, we got information.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to say there's no reason for me to change, that's your opinion. That's okay. But do acknowledge what is fact.
Yep.
That's all. That's all I say. Like, I just don't like that sort of blanket.
Rolling Stones are no longer playing Brown Sugar
yes.
at their concerts. It was the second most song that
yes.
behind Jumpin' Jack Flash. Keith Richards was asked about it. He's like, you know, I don't know, man. We wrote the song back in the 60s. At the time, it was a huge hit, one of their biggest hits. But if people are put off by it, they don't like it, whatever. It's not to say we'll never play the song again, but for right now, we're not playing it. On this date in history, I think it was 1966 or 1967, Mick Jagger apologized to Reverend Al Sharpton for the album Some Girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and I only know this now because I looked it up, the context of what Some Girls is all about. With that being said, he apologized and said, I'm not changing it. And we're still playing songs from the album. The Rolling Stones didn't get hurt by anybody going to the concerts or by their fan base or by their sales by not playing Brown Sugar. Is it a great song? I just heard it on the radio yesterday. Do I think any lesser of the radio station that played it? No, because it's been played for a long, long time. What bothers me are people that said, this is the way it's been.
There you go.
This is the way I was growing up. Yeah. I'm not racist, so why should I change it?
Right.
Or why should I sing it any differently? I heard a version of Dirty White Boy yesterday, and they took out white.
Dirty Boy?
Dirty. I also heard Play That Funky Music, White Boy.
Yeah.
There's a version out there, I don't know if you've heard it. Play That Funky Music, Boy. They don't say White Boy, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And to the person out there saying, great, now I can't say green popsicle because someone gets pissed off by green popsicle because somebody don't like the word.
Wait,
that's ridiculous.
I mean?
But it was kind of like, do we need to differentiate?
But you see, like, I think, look, what, why is that bad? What I mean by that
why is
what
bad?
Considering these things.
It's not, it's
but
not.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you are, but
if
I'm saying.
If you want to sing it that way and you want to do it your way, and usually it's older groups or really younger groups who don't want to change.
Yep.
They're proud. Same dude who drives up and down Valleydale Avenue with a Confederate flag in the back of his pickup truck.
That scared the crap out of him.
His mom and dad must be proud.
Proud boy.
Oh, we got tractor bombs. You never know. I think that in the University of Alabama, obviously, is not. Had particularly good news about their racial integration, not only from Wallace standing in the doorway, but until the sororities and stuff just over the last recent years, some of the TikTok stuff that's been out there. It's I don't think it's widespread, but there are factions
it's
of racism.
Spread enough.
And that goes for every college across the land. It's just that the University of Alabama. The other thing I think is really interesting is, you know what the percentage of Alabama students are that are outside the state?
Oh, it's gotten bigger and bigger. Outside the state?
Yeah, out of state.
Oh, how big?
Undergraduate or graduates. 63% of all students that go to the University of Alabama aren't from here.
Yeah,
which
now.
Which should tell you that.
Well,
When I first got here, it was split.
Right.
There was 63% Alabama fans or Alabama people here, and then
37%
outside the state. Because of the sports. It's got, and that's great because we're bringing money in from outside the state. That's wonderful for the university.
Yeah.
But it also means that if you're bringing outside people in that aren't used to the way we culturally live our lives, then perhaps it's
Listen, I know, let me tell you this, and this is just an anecdote, but I know three athletes and four individuals from California who came to the University of Alabama, three to play sports and four various programs. And I think, much like, again, me, coming from the West Coast, a couple of them were, like, it was too much of a culture shock. And some of it, I mean, it wasn't just racism, but it was a very tight culture. I have heard more people, and you hear this about every state. If you live in California, my parents, why would you want to live any place else?
Yeah.
You live in New York, right? Which nothing against from New York City. I would never live in New York.
Yeah.
But if you live in New York, why would you ever want to live any other place? And then when you get transplanted, you complain about all the things that this place doesn't have.
Yeah.
So I've met, how many people have I met from Alabama? Have you ever been out of state? Never been out of state.
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to go? Nope. I have no reason to go. I'm happy here.
I think when you come down to the South.
Is that really attractive, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think when you come down to the South, and you're not specifically going to throw out the state of Alabama.
No.
There is, we call it culture shock, whatever, but I talked to Mike Leach last week, and he's over this.
Yeah.
Stark warnings from state of Washington. Washington State pulled in this, that, and the other. And has adapted extremely well. Loves the beer, loves the food, loves the people.
Yeah.
But there is this idea that outsiders need to conform to the culture here in order to be accepted.
Yes.
When I came down here as a damn Yankee,
me too,
from Cincinnati, it took me about 6 or 7 years to fully be accepted, not only within myself and understand what the culture is down here in Alabama, but also by the listeners of my show.
That
and people would say, dude, I love you and I love your music. I hate your whipping Yankee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it took me about 6 or 7 years before I was finally accepted as one of them.
You know why? You
one
earn their you earn their trust.
Yeah. And now, you know what, 34 years later, I love
you're
it.
Still a damn Yankee.
I consider this my home.
You know, I told people when I first moved here, I'm from the South.
Yeah. All right, one question. Don't get into it. One question. Will Tom and Giselle work it out? Yes or no?
No.
Exactly, and I'll tell you why, because she did something yesterday that pretty much called the whole thing off.
Yesterday?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't miss. I mean, you were like on news.
Actually, it was late yesterday afternoon.
So it's breaking.
It's done. It's finished. There's no going back.
Beyond that quote that we read.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, right, I don't want to say it. Okay.
Birthdays! Bronny! James Jr. today has a birthday.
How old is he now?
How old is he? You should know. You're the big Laker fan. I watched some of their basketball last night. They're doing three seasons.
He's like 19?
He's 18.
18.
By the way, October 18th, Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, college football, all being played at the same flipping time. Woohoo!
Love it.
All four major sports. I don't know if there's hockey. I don't care. But those four major things.
Love it.
Also, Kevin Cronin. Of REO Speedway.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I saw a picture of him yesterday. He's got blonde hair. He's a freak. He looks kind of weird.
Is he like 70?
He's always looked kind of weird. He's 71. By the way, I forgot to, and I wished you an easy fast.
Thank you. Yeah, you don't wish any people.
I did some research because I didn't.
Yeah, you don't say happy Yom Kippur.
You're not supposed to say happy Yom Kippur. And so I said,
thank you.
Have an easy fast.
That's exactly.
And then I sent you some other Hebrew saying. That I don't even know. I did some research to make sure.
What'd
that
you send me?
I don't know. Some.
Well, you know, a week ago, or 10 days ago, you say Happy New Year, Shana Tova.
Yeah.
But yesterday was.
I sent you some phrase, and it said, "Say this to Jewish people; they really appreciate it." So I did, because I love you, and I want to make sure that you know. But
may it be an easy fast.
But Yom Kippur ended last night.
Yes.
Everything good? I know your blood sugar's a little off.
It's a day.
So what do you do since you don't fast? And do most? Now I know that during Lent.
Yeah,
we're not allowed to eat meat on Friday. We're supposed to give something up, but a lot of Catholics are like, I'll just do something extra, so I don't have to give up my favorite thing. I don't want to give up my porn, so I'll go ahead and I'll help the church.
We don't get to.
I don't want to stop drinking, or I don't want to stop doing this, or whatever, or you know, I'm not going to stop smoking. I'll go help the Jimmy Hale mission.
Yeah, that doesn't work for you. You don't come.
And we'll get halfway through a burger on a Friday and go, damn it, I'm eating meat, but God doesn't want me to waste food, so you finish it, and I promise I won't have meat for dinner. So for Yom Kippur...
What do we do? So you have how many days of Lent?
40 days.
Okay, so at Yom Kippur, basically what we've done is we've taken all that,
yeah,
24 hours, and in 24 hours, you fast, you don't eat. The reason you fast, there's an actual reason behind it. It is to help you feel the pain and the hunger that our ancestors did as they were traveling through the desert for 40 years. So there's that. And it's called the Day of Atonement, and what the Jews are called to do is to either be in synagogue, literally sun up to sun down. You are praying all day.
You don't leave.
You don't leave. You don't
do
leave.
People still do that?
In the Orthodox they do, and in conservative, pretty much. I mean, it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then it goes all the way to sundown. And there are multiple services and things that are happening. But it is our Day of Atonement. It is our Day of Judgment. It is the day that we are judged about how we have lived the past year and how we will live the next year. I always find this interesting for the Jews. The week before, Happy New Year, right? It's great, it's celebratory. And then 1 week later, then we're like worried.
Is it atonement? Is that
forgiveness for
forgiveness,
sin?
Yeah.
Or forgive, I'm sorry. Forgive, I'm atoning. Forgive me for what I have done.
Yes.
Forgive me. And you know, this stuff, it all comes from the same place. It's Old Testament stuff, right? So it's for all the people I have betrayed, for all the bad things I've done, for the ill thoughts, for the. And then, really, a part of the atonement, though, also is God, help me navigate the next year so that I do not repeat this again. But it's all in one day. No Lent, no 40 days of Lent. We've got to get on to the next thing.
Today is National College Radio Day.
That was funny, given what we were showing yesterday about.
I know, right?
Yeah.
To all you college kids out there, don't get into radio. There's no money and there's no jobs. Back in the 80s,
look at him now.
I'm sitting in my backyard with a tractor behind me and a skeleton dog in a fire pit. What the hell happened?
Used to be
what
on private,
hell happened to this Tony Kerr radio career?
He used to be on private jets.
I know. I used to be flying to Australia and doing radio remotes at the Grammys, and now I'm sitting up on my fire pit.
So don't get into radio.
My dog keeps knocking my microphone off. No, there are, I don't know how many college radio stations. I got my start at WVXU. I actually worked at WLHS, which was my high school radio station. I was the only person, until this day I think I still am, the only person who did major radio who had a radio show on WVXU.
Yep.
It was a jazz station. It's on your left side.
Thank you.
I had a jazz show for an hour, and I didn't know a lot about jazz, so I just played George Benson the entire hour.
We didn't even have a radio station.
Today is National Badger Day. Not Wisconsin Badgers, but the actual Badger itself. Today is National Body Language Day. You know, we
you know there are body language experts.
Oh, I know. There's one on the New York Post that can look at Meghan Markle and tell them exactly what they're thinking and what they're doing and how they're reacting, and they're doing with Tom and Giselle right now. Body language is really, really important.
Yes.
And it's a subconscious thing. You don't ever want to talk to somebody with your arms crossed.
Yeah.
I don't care if you got two torn rotator cuffs. It doesn't matter. It looks like you're standoffish, and it looks like you're done with them. You do want to be open position towards a person. Certainly when you're on a date, if someone's got their legs pointing the opposite direction, but it goes from eyes, it goes from touching, it goes the entire body language. Very rarely will someone show you a positive body language that is not true. Now, there are people that show you a negative body language that is not true. In other words, they don't look like they're interested, but they really are. I am.
You are? Wow.
Can you say?
Yeah, okay.
Today is National Noodle Day.
You like noodles? I love noodles.
Yeah, noodles are good, but it's like rice. You know, I eat it like an hour later, I'm starving.
Well,
chicken noodle soup, man, like an hour after I get done. Maybe it's because I know I eat chicken noodle soup like an hour later, I'm starving.
That's soup.
Well, just noodles. So I take the broth out and see if the noodles. Yep. Ramen noodles? For a dollar, for a bag, you get a meal, that's a good deal. You want it fast and save some money, get some ramen noodles. Or a dollar at the public
Trade. Yeah, that was good.
Today is a National Plus Size Appreciation Day.
Oh, really? That's good. Don't go there.
Overactive thyroid people, you big bone people that just
body positive.
Down.
I mean, come on. We're not going to talk about it, but did you see Lizzo pulling the flute?
Yeah.
The crystal flute? I love her.
What I think is really interesting is when you see someone who's really, really overweight, and they envelop and embrace their overweightness and their oversightness, and then they lose all this weight.
Yeah.
Who was that Megan Trainor? Who was and now she looks fantastic.
Megan Trainor lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, you know, a bunch of them. Then they lose all their weight, and their fan base, who's fat, is like, wait a minute.
Well, look.
And they're like, and then they talk about their newfound love, how healthy they feel, and that they don't have to poop four times a day.
Well,
and that
think about
it. And they're going to live longer, and all of a sudden, you embrace this fatness, and now you're not fat anymore.
Remember when Luther lost all the weight?
See, Luther was sexy when he was fat. He was sexy when he was fat. Luther was the man. You know why? Because Luther was singing about making love and doing all these nasty things, but you know he probably wasn't doing it.
Oh, you know,
he could have been.
He's Luther.
But then when he lost weight and started looking good, then you're thinking,
well, I mean,
you're thinking Kelly. You're thinking this guy could do it.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a good looking guy talking about this stuff, it's a little creepy. So, but today is World Smile Day.
I love coming over here.
As you should. You got tractors. Got a fire going here.
Don't burn yourself.
I'm not. I'm trying to get the smoke out. All right, so Tom Giselle, we're going to get into it on Fox 6 this morning with Janice Rogers and Mike Doverly. It's interesting. I'll bring this up on because I was on the J. Mark doing it with Dolores Anderson, who went through a divorce about the same time I did. Divorce sucks. There's no good stuff to it. Add children to it and compound it like 100 times. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. I wish there was a class for people that could go through mediation, hire lawyers,
and
go through the whole process just to see how lousy it is before you go.
A pre-divorce. Yeah. No, there is.
It's like a scared straight for people that are thinking about getting divorced.
That's interesting, Tony.
But people aren't going to be willing to spend the money to do it.
No.
But I'm telling you, be careful for what you wish for. I'm just saying that. Hopefully, you're in a situation where you both don't like each other, and that's the one thing you don't deal with is heartbreak, which is what my situation was, thankfully. But we were talking about the Tom and Giselle thing, and Lars is feeling the pain. And I understand that.
Yes.
I understand that. And he talked for like 10 minutes straight.
Yeah.
About the, and just was, and yeah. I felt for him because I know there's still resentment, still pain there in his heart, despite the fact that he's got himself a new life, new relationships in his life, and he seems to be genuinely happy. He's got a really nice daughter, I'm sure. So Giselle did something yesterday. The minute I heard it, I was like, it's done. It's over.
What did she do? Because I thought
she just posted something on September 11th about her husband saying, go Tom, go Bucks.
Yeah.
There was no heart or injury. But I was going like, oh, that's interesting. This was a month ago.
Yeah.
What did she do yesterday that told me that it was over?
I don't know, because she said something a few days ago that told me that it was over.
What she took her room off.
Okay.
Listen, yeah, I know a ring is symbolic. Yeah. The minute my wife wanted to separate, she took a ring off. That hurt more than anything in the world, because that told me there's no fight left. I'm not going to try. There's no hope, because when you take the ring off, you're done. That's the truth. You're done. You take the ring off.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to work at it. I'm not going to put it back on again. It's never going on. Once it comes off, it doesn't go back on again. I wore mine only because I believe in a supernatural God, and I was trying to do the right thing, and I thought maybe a miracle will happen here. Mm-hmm. And so I wore it all the way until I got the degree. My daughter said, Dad, you're not with Mom anymore. Why are you wearing your wedding ring? And I said, you know why? Because I got married, and I promised under the Lord's eyes twice in our backyard and in church, once my ex-wife became a Catholic, that I'm married and I'm still spoken for.
Mm-hmm.
And until I know that we're not only legally divorced but morally divorced, then I will take the ring off. And I did. For all I know, she took her ring and sold it or whatever. But when you take the ring off,
here's the thing.
I don't know if Tom's still wearing his or not.
Well, and this is the thing.
But she's throwing the towel.
We've kind of redefined separation. Again, I'm talking to you as a psychologist. We've kind of redefined separation. Separation is kind of like it's over. Separation has always been, or has been from a psychological standpoint, an important intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Even when couples don't necessarily want to separate, I mean, they're thinking about divorce, it's really problematic, they don't want to separate. A lot of times psychologists say, it is important for you two not to be under the same roof right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're married. You're and in order to work this out, you need to not be under the same roof. And I think what's interesting about that is, in that case, of course, if you be a wedding ring, you keep your wedding ring on. You're not living under the same roof because you're separating in order to work on your own issues, in order to have some psychological space where you can do it. But that is different than we got separated, you know, ring is off, which is a lot of times now, you know, sometimes it's for logistics, sometimes it's for finances. Couples will just, they're there, they're under the same roof, it's nasty, they're going to couples therapy, it's blah, 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 blah. And the separation really comes essentially, the separation is the end of the marriage and the next step before the legal part.
And sometimes it is. If you are planning on working on your marriage to save it, separation is crucial. I believe in that.
Yeah.
It's like taking a breather and like, listen.
And it doesn't always have to be that. I was going to say, I'm sorry. Sometimes it's just separate. Go down to the basement.
I mean, it is the literal word, separation. Yes. Get away from me. I can't handle you right now. I need some time away.
Yes.
And I get that. But I mean, like all things, you need to sit down and go, okay, what does a separate, because in my case, my ex wanted a separation. And she told me, I don't want to get divorced, I want a separation. But her idea of a separation.
Careful now.
I know. I was like, okay, that's fine. But if we're going to do this, we need to work on it. In some reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
Moving 500 miles away is not, how am I supposed to work with you on this? And so, and I think that honestly was, and I totally get it, but I think that was an opportunity to kind of ease into the divorce.
Well, it always is. Now that's another thing.
Listen, I want to make things work, but I want separation, knowing that there's no way to reconcile.
Well, that's
it. But let's be real here. If we're going to reconcile, we need to work on it. Not tonight. Not right now.
Right. There you go.
Take a couple weeks, go do your thing.
Yes.
I'll do my thing, blah, 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 and maybe things will change a little bit, because sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yep.
And you realize just how important things are, and you're willing to get to work on it. In this particular case, it was just a formality, and I was like, that's cool, and I think it's a formality for a lot of people. But once you took the ring off,
yeah.
Not only is it symbolic of your marriage, and listen, Giselle, everyone knows Giselle and Tom, so it's not like she's going to walk into a bar and someone's not going to know who she is, and hey, you're not married. But it was important to me to let people know that I was still chosen for. That's important to me.
It is. That's why
I don't want to tell people,
right?
Are you married? Well, yeah, I'm married. Why aren't you wearing a ring? Well, we're up to separation. Oh, well, that's just, I didn't need the peripheral, the extracurricular crap that comes along with not wearing a ring, not to say that I'm a prize for anybody, but I was still married, and so I was going to wear it until I knew I wasn't.
You know what we've done, listen, you and I used to do, we've done whole shows.
And the other thing, real quick, and I know what you got to say is important, but everyone, Giselle knows everyone's taking pictures of her.
Yes.
This was more than a symbolic gesture.
Well, because they were taking pictures of her when she still had the ring on.
Yeah.
Right? Look, she's laughing and her ring is on. So things may be...
Adam Levine's wife is still wearing her wedding ring. If somehow she went gardening that day, you better believe she remembered to put the damn thing back on. Right. Because people were taking her picture, not continuing.
I was going to say, we've done a whole show on the meaning of rings and the, you know... usually men. Mm-hmm. I can't wear my ring, it pinches my finger. Yeah. I can't work out in it. You know, now we've got like whatever they are, the rubber rings for guys who can't wear rings and all that kind of stuff. And this is my personal, it's just me. You know, if you're going to get married and you're going to choose to wear rings, keep the damn ring on.
Yeah.
Now, I know when we travel, this is becoming, I'll just share a little, you know, a lot of times Jules will leave her ring at home. And the first time it happened, I'm like, you don't have your ring on.
Mm-hmm.
No, this wasn't a paranoid. We've been married like whatever, 14 years. Which is like,
you a little bit,
I was like, mine's on, you know. And hers is, look, we're traveling. It's a diamond. I don't want it to get stolen. You know, my fingers swell.
What did you think about that?
It's a very interesting thing because at... at an intellectual level, I get it. I mean, it did not bother me, like, cognitively. I get it. She wasn't just like, I just don't feel like wearing my ring. There were legitimate reasons.
Yeah.
There was this part somewhere down in here that was like, I wasn't irate, but it was like, well, that sucks. That's the best way I can describe it. Well, that sucks.
Did you tell her?
Oh, yeah, she knows.
Yeah.
I mean, and again.
Has she done it again?
She does all the time.
Did she wear it when she was on her anniversary?
No, we leave it home. Now, again, my wife does not have a diamond ring like Giselle does, but, I mean, we paid a lot of money for it, and she doesn't travel with jewelry when we go on a trip. It's okay. You know, it's fine. We did actually go looking, because our anniversary, we went looking for, like, a fake ring, like a cheap ring. I don't know if that's good or bad. I can't mind.
Then you got these crazy people that actually tap the ring with you.
Yeah, I know. It's like, that's
like,
so dumb.
What the hell are you doing, dude? You don't need to profess to the world that you're so married that you got something you can never take off your finger again.
Right. They're not going to, it's dumb. I mean, besides the ring thing, you know, I was thinking about it. We'll talk about this on Fox. If you just look at all of the markers, forget who they are. They've been married 13 years. Classic time. Kids are, I don't know how old their kids are. They're not.
I think they're 12 and 9 or 12 and 10, something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is not.
Time.
This is the time when it's an interesting psychological time for a couple. It's not the beginning where you still got the, you know, we just got young kids and we're going to start. It's not the end. That empty nester, you know, we got. This is the, it's almost like there's pressure. Okay, I gotta make a call. It's like, you know, I gotta make the call right now because I still have time ahead of me. We've been trying to deal with this for a while. It's not working. A lot of times, couples will, and you know my view on this, couples like, we're gonna try to stay together for the kids. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
You know?
If you're fighting and
don't
not
do
good,
that.
Then you're making it worse for the kids.
So there is this kind of, like, we've been working on it, it's time to make the call.
Yeah.
And it usually happens. It usually happens either real early, like we talked about earlier today, after the first year before there's kids,
yeah.
Or it happens at about a decade-ish, or it happens 20 years later. It's about a 10-year, you got about seven to 10 years of in it before you're at a critical time.
Yeah. This reminds me a little bit, and I was rooting for Tom and Giselle.
Everybody, because
they weren't the perfect couple. I mentioned it reminded me a little bit of Desi and Lucy because they've been together, we've seen them together, we've seen
yes.
them play together and love each other. And
yep.
like, you know, I heard a great story from Loretta Lynn yesterday on NPR about the love-hate relationship she had with her husband.
Yeah, that
and she's written in her book about how horrible a marriage it was, but she's like, you know, one day we were at each other's throats, the next day we were making love. That's what, at least for her, that's what marriage is all about.
Yeah, but it was literally.
We loved each other one day, we yeah. hated each other.
Yeah, but with Loretta Lynn, it was like, we were literally.
It was a different time. But she was also incredibly vulnerable. She still thinks she's not, she still thought she wasn't a great singer, despite the fact all the wonderful things she did.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
couldn't believe that Sissy Spacek was playing her in a movie, all these things. And so she was really, not gullible, but naive.
Naive, there you go.
And she had her own Colonel Tom Parker, who was her husband, that was kind of running the show and telling her, hey, you need to, she's like, I would have never sang a song.
Right.
And she never really wrote another song after he died. And so she thanked him for that. But that was their marriage and it worked for them. Jane Fonda was interviewed a couple of years ago.
I remember
that. She was asked about, it broke my heart. She was asked about Ted Turner.
I remember
and
this
she
interview.
Said, I love that man more than anything in the world. And I would give anything to make it work. And he felt the same way.
But it doesn't work.
But they just couldn't figure it out. Now, a lot of it had to do with the fact that Ted was a go-getter, that he wanted to work, that he was a mogul, that he was... But she's like, you know, there was a period of time where it was just perfect. And then it got to the point where I just couldn't put up with it anymore. And I realized he wasn't going to change. And I think... this is not about Tom unretiring. That is a small portion, divorce spoon, if you will, this bigger thing. I don't think when she sat there and said, I need Tom to be more responsible and drive the kids to school. Driving the kids to school is a divorce spoon. That's a very small thing. Would it help her out? Yes.
But
I mean, it's much larger than that. And so I'm thinking that maybe... I don't think Tom's a horrible person,
no.
Despite the fact that he actually was dating Giselle while he was having baby with Bridget Moynihan, which a lot of people are like, whoa, okay, maybe that was a little bit of a red flag in this relationship, despite the fact that he had 13 years,
uh-huh.
And I think he's a great, he seems to be a doting father when he's around, mm-hmm. But I think maybe Tom loves his children, but he doesn't enjoy the aspects of always being the one that needs to raise those kids. And because he had his job for the last 20 years,
mm-hmm.
that he kind of felt like, and this is very, this is a good analogy for a lot of men out there. I'm the provider. I'm the one that makes the money. I'm the one that works. This is what I love to do. This is who I am.
You don't get the money.
I know.
You're not the provider.
I realize that. But this is what I do.
There you go.
You knew that when you got into
this
relationship.
There you go. Now you're going. Yep.
And he did say he was going to play to be 45, and he's now 45.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will he play next year when he's 46? I mm-hmm. don't know, now that he's going to be divorced.
Well, now he can play until he's 50.
Well, and you watch. He'll hang it up.
Yeah.
He'll hang it up. Not because, in spite of her, but he may say, I'm finally done, because he wanted to play to his 45, and I don't think Tampa Bay is going to get up to the Super Bowl this year. And so at that point, maybe he just says, listen, I've had enough. So I think that Giselle is looking at this. There's so many great tangents here
yes.
on this divorce tree. And I'll get into Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne here in a second. But I believe that she believes that even if Tom was there, he wouldn't be the father she wants him to be or as responsible as he needs to be. And she knows that regardless of whether he's... And I think he is defensively trying to make it good for himself by saying, I'm missing every Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm missing every birthday. I'm missing my kids' dress recitals. He's saying these things. He said these things. And you're like, okay, dumbass, then stop playing football. But he can't do it.
Well,
he's the Ted Turner. He's like, this is
yeah.
who I was born to be. I'm the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and this is the gift I was given, and I'm going to kick
yeah.
it.
Well,
because he knows it well, and he's very, very good at it. Maybe marriage is not one of the things for him.
That's exactly... So that's the part. I mean, Giselle's comment or quote was not just that he, there was a quote about not taking kids to practice, but it was, we have kids. We have kids who have events, life events. It was, it kind of paralleled his. I need him to be more present. Present is, this is what you're saying, present is not just physically being there.
Mm-hmm.
You got to physically be there and then be engaged.
Yep.
And you hear this all the time, you know, he's a doting father when he's around, when he's there. That's bullshit. Like, that doesn't, you don't get, that's not a, that qualifier doesn't work. And I do think this is, you know, and I say this in a way, it sounds like I'm slamming on Tom, but this is a fascinating choice and consequence. If you say, if your wife is essentially giving you an ultimatum, and a lot of times we will slam on the partner, how dare you give them an ultimatum? You're married. Yep. She can give them the, you know, the, but if she says, look, we've done this for years, 13 years, we need you here. We need you here. And, you know, she's probably said that a gazillion times. He's probably tried, he took 10 days off to deal with the thing. He's, you know, he's trying to make it all work. That doesn't usually work when a spouse sort of brings up, we need to make a fundamental change. And guys are the worst at this.
Yeah.
I'll make a change. I won't travel six times. I'll travel four times.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It'll be great. I'll come to the soccer game. You know, and then you go on the phone, da 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 da. I think what Tom is doing, and again, we're speculating. We don't know, but if I'm going to speculate, he said, I'm not going to do that. He may have said, I can't do that, but I'm not going to do that. I am going to play.
Yeah.
And that decision is fine. Then you get divorced. Now, you know as well as I know that there's going to be all kinds of the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that she didn't do, because that's what the relationships go apart. It's not just one person. But I do think that at least in her comments, and he has not made, you know, that's the thing. He has not made comments. Why? Maybe he's sick of her. Maybe she's a terrible mom. Maybe she's not a good supportive partner. I mean, we don't know. But those quotes that she's made are saying, you need to change. And he's saying, there's a difference between I can't, I don't want to.
Yeah.
I always think you are capable of making some amount of change.
It breaks my heart, and it's natural for children to take on some of the blame and responsibility of the divorce. A lot of kids will ask the question when I get in.
Oh, every kid does.
Was it my fault?
Was it my fault? Yep.
And that just absolutely breaks your heart.
Of course.
If you're a youngster and you're watching your mom and dad's film right now, it is never, ever the kid's fault. Ever.
Never. Nope.
It is never.
Uh-uh.
I don't care how difficult you are. I don't care what your issues are. It is never, ever the kid's responsibility or fault of a divorce. That being said.
Yes.
I get this feeling that if Tom and Giselle's kids were 17 and 19, they figure out a way to make it work.
Oh, sure. Well, because there's less responsibility.
And I don't know, because we're still talking 6, 7, 8, 9 years down the road before they're of legal age.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they can reconcile at that point, because then it will look like the children's fault, and it's not. By that time, I think they both find someone new.
This is the sludge time of marriage. This is why it happens. You got kids. They're not just toddlers.
Yeah.
They're doing all kinds of things. They need you there, or you need to be there. And so you know what it does? It takes away your ability to do all the things you want to do.
Yeah. You brought them into the world. That's your responsibility. You had the kids. You made the love. You had that 15 minutes to take care of your kids. Now, of course, the rumor is that Giselle will be there in 2 days.
Seriously?
Twitter is on fire this morning about Giselle and Pete Davidson.
What is with Pete Davidson?
Well, Pete comes in, swoops in, because he's gullible, he's naive,
he's weird,
he's goofy looking, he's still making commercials. And so, yeah, he's doing a Taco Bell commercial I saw one this morning. So every marriage is different. And when yours isn't working, we like to look at other marriages to see how they're doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I use this as an example because I think it's one of the greatest marriages not only in history, but in rock and roll history, and that is, of course, Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne. Because Sharon and Ozzy, believe it or not, back in the 90s, went through the same exact situation that Tom and Giselle were going through. Ozzy couldn't get off the road, despite the fact that it was going to kill his ass. I mean, he was going to be dead. He was banging women, he was doing all kinds of drugs and drinking. He loved it, and he even said, I got to get off the road. I can't do this anymore. It's killing me. I can't do it. Tom said the same thing. I got to get off the road. I'm one hit away from getting concussed.
Yep.
I've got children, I think. So what happened? They made a decision together, just like Tom and Giselle did.
Yep.
It's time to hang it up and get off the road and come home and spend time with your family.
Yeah.
Ozzy did that for 1 year. Moved back to the UK, and it was his wife
who said, get
the hell out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not happy.
Right.
I know you're not happy, and I want you to be happy.
Yes.
And they had kids, same age.
Yes.
Same age
no,
kids,
I get
8 9 years
I
old.
I get it, I get
and
it.
And said, listen, I know what makes you happy, and that is being on the road. Hopefully this year of sobriety and staying home has changed you a little bit, but you need to go make some records, and this is what you brought on earth for, and go. And they've stayed together through all of it. This is a guy who had his hands around her neck and said, we need to kill you. I don't know who the we was, right? He was messed up on mushrooms or LSD or something. But for that marriage, it worked. At least we think it did. And Sharon Osbourne's another person who's been making a lot more money than Ozzy Osbourne has the last 10 or 15 years doing The View and doing all her television shows. So, I mean, she's self-sufficient, too. It would have been real easy for her to say, you know, screw you, Ozzy. You tried to kill me. You're a drug addict. You're an alcoholic.
Yes.
You're a danger to your children. You're all these things. And now let's go make a reality TV show and make millions of dollars. Now he's doing this what's this Osbourne show with him and Jack, and they look at videos and they comment on these.
They used to travel, but he can't.
It's horrible. Yeah, they were in Huntsville at this place.
I don't like that.
And now he's singing songs again. He played a halftime of a football game.
The comparison, I get what you're saying, but it's like kind of not.
Just because people stay together doesn't mean that they're totally happy. I get that. But there's something to be, and I've said this a million times, my mom and dad were married for 56 years, I don't know if we're going to see that anymore, but there's something to be said about committing to something and seeing it all the way through.
I get
death
you.
Do us part.
Listen,
and I understand
yes
what you're saying. And I'm not talking about killing each other, I'm not talking
about
abuse.
No, and I think that's great. Yes, I think even...
My mom tried to kill my dad too.
Really?
Yes. But my dad stuck with it because that's what he said, I do, I'm committed to her. Even when she was Alzheimer's the last 4 years of his life and he was going to see her in the hospital and she was making out with other men down the hallway, trying to punch my dad, he had to hide his gun, and I'm sitting to myself and I'm like, Dad, why?
Yeah.
And he goes, because that's what I committed to do and I know that I'm going to be rewarded for sticking through it and doing the best I possibly do with your mother in her situation. I felt the same way,
but listen,
despite the fact that I know I'm probably happier without.
But when you talk about, see, now this is interesting, because when you talk about a couple that stays together for 56 years and is miserable, you know,
there's
talk,
no marriage. It's fun from the start to the end.
No, but I know, but think about a couple that is together for 40 years, 50 years, whatever. They've both made a decision to stay. So it's not like one is staying. So, but now, granted, there are lots of scenarios, typically, but it's still a choice. You see a lot of times where one partner, usually the woman, has not worked. You know, he's provided. She's in a position where she can't live the lifestyle by getting divorced. And I've seen a lot of women who say, that's why I'm staying. You know, and again, as a psychologist, you're supposed to do the, but you're like, for the love of God. Really?
Yeah.
And if that's your choice, okay. But then your choice is you get to be psychologically miserable with all your things.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, that's the thing. The decision to stay or go, obviously there's religious rules, but that decision to stay or go has got to be one where it is mutual. You should not be holding on to the person who wants to go. And if you don't want to be there, you shouldn't be there. And it is, I've said it before, I'll say it again, it is the worst thing for kids. It's the worst thing, particularly if you are showing the lack of love for one another.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
It is a taking the Band-Aid off. It is better to take the Band-Aid off. And let me tell you, I mean, just given the level of divorce will change kids forever. But parents who are better off as humans and better off and better parents when they get divorced, kids adapt.
Yeah.
It's the kids who are living in a miserable situation where it becomes worse.
Kids are resilient. That's true. All right. Great show. Thanks for the marriage advice.
Yes.
That's great. Maybe one person this morning is watching the show going,
yeah.
I was thinking about filing today, and I'm like, you know what? I'll give it a shot. I'll see. Because life does, you know, I keep talking about I-65 going the same direction. Sometimes you see the other side. Sometimes you're a mile apart. Just don't get off the interstate. Life ebbs and flows. We have seen situations where people are at each other's throats
yes.
1 year, and then the next year they're getting remarried. The idea of divorcing somebody, loving them, trusting so much, distrusting them so much that you want to divorce,
the guy
and then getting remarried to that same person 2 years later is
do
like...
Do you remember the guy on our web show four times?
Yeah. Four times.
Four times.
He got remarried four times, same gal. To the same gal, four times. How is that possible? You think after the second time you go, you know what, if we just stay together, we're going to be all right. Do we want to go through this shit again? I mean, it's crazy. Four times, man.
That's like getting struck by lightning like multiple times, like, right?
Oh, bless America. All right, download the TKR app, Tony Curry Radio on Android, Curry with a K, TKR app on Apple. Thanks to tens of thousands of folks who have already done that. You got great classic rock and roll with all these shows. Students of the Game starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. We have Mission Might with Michael Coleman. When in Rome with Stuart Rome. He's going to have a special guest. We're recording his show today. Special guest with When in Rome with Stuart Rome. The Woodhouse Day Spa, Birmingham.woodhousespas.com. We have the Austin Hank Show. We have the Brother Kane Show. Two shows with Kip Kiefer. One, a bet that runs at 9, 11, 1, and 3 on Saturdays. You can also see that on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. He's got a show called Need to Know. And thanks again to all of our great sponsors, Chris Dorsey, State Farm Team. Talked to John Gray yesterday. He's doing real good from Drift School Gray. Tommy Williams from Workplay. Got a big Halloween party coming up on October 29th with David Merlin. Budweiser is one of our great sponsors. So I want to thank everyone for that. Coosa Valley Auto Sale, one of our newest clients. CoosaValleyAutoSale.com. CoosaValleyAutoSale.com. We can't see people writing on the bottom of the screen. So thank you for watching this morning. CoosaValleyAutoSale.com. Check out their website. They're great. I did a live show from his place last Thursday. He's got a brand new shop called the Blue Herring that opens every single morning, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. So check it out. Cooper and Brad Porch and all those guys up there. They do wonderful work. And thanks for everyone for being part of this big thing. Dr. Josh Claypo, thank you. Good to see you this morning here at the Curry and Claypo Show. Go to Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Just Google Tony Curry Radio Podcast, Curry with a K, and go to Audio Boom, and you can find all of our podcasts, any of our musically elemented shows, are up on Spotify. Fantastic shows, so check those out as well. And we'll be on Fox 6 this morning, getting more into the Giselle and Tom thing. We won't be able to go as long as we did here.
We're going to need 26 minutes.
We're going to have 6 minutes to get through a 13-year mortgage. Well, I'm going to talk right off the bat that
I'm not going to say
that she took the ring off because I think that's the telltale sign.
Hey,
by the way, too, I want to mention too, a good friend of mine. I had lunch with him Tuesday. Seth Smith is going to be starting a brand new show on Tony Curry Radio probably next week called Home Field Advantage. What is that show about?
Is it a sports show?
Could be,
but maybe not.
Probably not. We'll be talking about that show coming up a little bit later on. Also, our good friend Brian Christine, I'll call him out because I emailed him yesterday and I chased him down. And I see, if you're not going to answer my phone calls, but you're posting shit on Instagram, I will hunt you down. Don't tell me that it's automated or someone's doing your social media for you. I know you're out there. I see that little red, that little green dot on Facebook, and I know that you're live. I can find you. some great shows in the way, so thanks for watching this morning. Fox 6, 9:35 this morning here with Mike Deberly and Janice Rogers. We love our partnership with them, and thanks for watching this morning here on the Curry and Claypo Show.